We're unveiling a new feature today on MMA Rated Radio in which every Friday we'll invite a different member from the MMA media to talk about the week that was and the week ahead in the world of mixed martial arts. Today, we kick things off with Ben Folks of CagePotato.com as well as SI.com, and fans may have also read his work at 5OuncesOfPain.com, IFL.TV, and his own personal blog, TheFightingLife.com. What's going on, Ben?
Nothing much. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's quite the resume you have, and like I said to you, a big fan of your work and very excited that you're joining us today on MMA Rated. As I mentioned, you have done work with the IFL in the past, and just yesterday there was a press conference with Jay Larkin and Boss Rudin talking about some changes within the company. Most specifically, they'll now be using a six-sided ring, which will be called the Hex, and they said there's some other surprises in store for us between now and August. My question to you is, a lot has been talked about the demise of this organization, that they're on their last legs. Do you think that that has all been greatly exaggerated, and maybe they might rise up from the ashes, so to speak, and surprise us all?
You know, it's really tough for me to say, not being like on the inside of their financial reports. I can tell you, though, working for them, at times it felt like one of those war movies with it's like 10 guys like walking in the line, and every 15 minutes one of them dies, and you just wonder, like, how much longer until it's my turn? You know, it's kind of like that. I worked for them for about a year and a half, and the staff we had when I started was nowhere near the staff at the beginning, you know, so it was kind of a crazy, tumultuous time throughout all of it, so it's hard to say if it's really any different now. As for the new stuff, the Hex, all that stuff, yeah, I don't know. You know, all I can really say is that I have a lot of affection for the IFL. I'm sure I always will, as being, you know, somebody who really helped me break in to MMA writing. But at the same time, it's a little like being in an abusive relationship where everyone around you can see that it's bad and wants you to get out, and you're thinking, like, no, there's some good things. You don't see it. And now, it's just very frustrating after a while. I don't know if they'll rise up from the ashes, but I would be surprised.
It seems always weird that every few months or so they try to bring in something new, you know, make some innovative change, and nothing seems to be working. Do you think that I believe that part of the problem is because they do have some diamonds in the rough there. They have some good fighters. You know, they put on great fights from time to time, and the television show on HGNet is getting better with each and every broadcast. I do think that their biggest problem is the ring, and I don't think this six-sided ring will truly help them. I think that fans like to see some uniformity in the sport, and people who are flipping the channels, they see a cage, they think, okay, this is mixed martial arts as opposed to something with ropes. Do you share that sort of sentiment? Do you believe that the ring is sort of part of the big problem with the IFL?
You know, I think I wouldn't say that the ring is part of the big problem. I think what you touched on, the nature that they've had of kind of shifting their focus, like, you know, okay, we're going to do this now, and then 6 months later, okay, no, we're going to do something else completely different. And they go around fixing all these little cosmetic things, but then, you know, not making the like essential changes that they really need to make. The ring has benefits and drawbacks. You know, having to restart the action in the middle of the ring, like that's annoying, but at the same time, when you go to a live show, it's easier to watch a fight in a ring than it is a cage. It's a little easier for TV, and I know the TV, you know, Jay Larkin came from Showtime, so that TV kind of angle has a big effect on how the IFL does things. I would say it's that the ring and their decision now to go with the Hex, it's more like indicative of a general attitude problem rather than it being the problem itself.
Okay, well, fair enough. And they do have their next show on May 16th, next Friday, on HDNet. So, you know, we'll see what happens with them then, and then obviously in August. This weekend, there's a lot to talk about. Obviously, there's Dream on May 11th, I believe it is. That's Sunday. I always get confused with the time difference between here on the East Coast and obviously in Japan. But there's also a Cage Rage event over in the UK. And I don't know about you, but very excited for the return of Ross Poynton. You share that sort of excitement that I have?
I mean, I'm a little worried about Ross Poynton's head after that last cut. I mean, that was probably one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. Don't know. I mean,
in all seriousness,
you get something like that.
Yeah, go ahead.
You get a cut like that, I got to wonder how you can keep moving forward without wondering if your head is going to spontaneously split open as soon as you're hit, you know?
Yeah, good point. I have to say, though, In the history of The Ultimate Fighter, probably one of my favorite cast members, just for that scene where he came out and no one wanted to take the fight in the semifinals of The Ultimate Fighter 3, and then he came out and was like waddling in there with a smile on his face. I thought that was great. But another big and familiar name to MMA fans, Ian Freeman, also going to be fighting on that card. This is a guy that's been around a long time. Is there any reason, though, to check out the Cage Rage show? It was supposed to be on ProElite.com. Is there any reason for fans to go online and try to get it on any sort of means that they can through the web, or is this kind of just a nothing type of show?
You know, I mean, I think from what I've seen, Cage Rage, they do a good job, you know. And Ian Freeman is always entertaining no matter what he's doing. I love Ian Freeman. I would say, it's not one of those things that I would cancel plans and stay home for. But, if you're hanging around and have internet access and one of you is in fights, I don't see why not.
Okay. Well, now I have to rethink my decision to cancel some plans. The other big show is the Dream, the third offering from Dream that's going down, like I said, May 11th. And the big news surrounding that card has been Nick Diaz. Will he stay? Will he go? Is he going to fight? Is he not going to fight? Last I checked, and hopefully things don't change by the time I post this, but he will, in fact, be fighting. For those that haven't been really following this or are kind of confused by everything that's going on, what has been the big problem between Elite XC not letting him fight and then letting him fight and all that stuff?
Right. Well, from what I understand, Showtime has a clause with Elite XC that they don't want anybody who's going to fight on one of their cards fighting within 30 days, 30 days before the card. And this fight, I believe, is something like 34 days. It's not technically in that range. And so Elite XC originally, Cesar Gracie referred to them as, the underlings, Gary Shaw's minions, agreed to it and said, okay, you can do this fight since it's not within 30 days. And then when Gary Shaw got wind of it, he said, no, you can't do the fight. And then they went back and forth a little bit and now have apparently allowed him to do it. But as Cesar Gracie said, and I think this pretty much captures it, but, I'll believe it when he gets on the plane. When they touch gloves, that's when you'll know it's for real. Until then, it's still up in the air.
Do you believe that he will, in fact, fight?
I hope so. I love watching Nick Diaz. I love a great jiu-jitsu practitioner like him, and he's just always exciting to watch. So I sure hope he gets in there and fights, although I would be worried. I mean, I don't know. I know he had that surgery to try and repair some of the scar tissue in his face. His cuts were always a concern with him. And, if that's still a concern, if he's going to go and fight now and then fight in a little over 30 days again for Elite XC, that's definitely something I'd be worried about.
Are you surprised that an organization such as Elite that is gaining a lot of momentum now with the CBS card and all that would even let a guy like him even have a clause in their contract that they would let big name fighters such as Nick Diaz, a guy who's only fought twice in their organization thus far? He's got another fight scheduled on June 14th. What is the point of even allowing him and allowing fighters such as himself having that clause of the 30 days, between fights, to even go out there and not make money for your promotion? I know a lot of people now like to talk about, promotions working together and everything like that, but it just seems kind of stupid to me. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange time right now where everybody's still trying to figure out what's going to happen. Is the MMA model going forward going to be all non-exclusive deals? Is it going to be all exclusive? Is it going to be somewhere in the middle? And you can kind of see what Adrenaline and Affliction are going through, having, Chin Sylvia and Ben Rothwell are signed with both, and so it totally messes up how they plan. I wonder with Elite XC, if it was somebody other than Nick Diaz, they would be doing this. If it was somebody, Elite XC seems to really be putting all their eggs in a couple of very specific baskets. They got Kimbo, they got Gina Carano, and they're really going to ride that as far as it takes them. These other people, I think, if you look at the money breakdown on their cards, I think that it bears that out, that they like to put a whole lot into the people at the top, and everybody else, they only want to do enough to keep them around when they need them. And so maybe that's part of it. I don't know. But it is odd to see that happening so much, and it's going to come to a head sooner or later.
All right, well, you look at the Dream card. You even look at their website and everything like that. It obviously reminds everyone of Pride, the way they operate thus far. I mean, they just had a show a couple of weeks ago. Now they have another one. And Despite the fact that this one's coming really on the heels of their second show, it's a pretty solid card. I mean, a lot of familiar faces on this card. Obviously, there's Jason Mayhem Miller making his debut for them. Of course, Nick Diaz. We see Eddie Alvarez on the card, Kyle Uno. I mean, it's a pretty stacked card. Is this one that you're actually looking forward to? I mean, for me, the second one was a little underwhelming, but I think that this one might actually, in fact, be, despite the little pub that it's received, the best one so far.
Yeah, you know, and I think that you're right, like the stuff that they do to kind of purposely remind you of Pride, as far as production value and all that stuff, you know, that's great. I don't see how you can not like that. And, you know, the cards, the thing that makes me worry is that looking at past cards, you know, the first two, I thought, wow, this will be really good. And it seems like something always happens where it never turns out to be as good as you think it's going to be. I mean, that might just be unlucky so far. I don't know. But I don't see any reason why they can't be really successful with this one.
Yeah, always some sort of controversy, something that is brewing after the actual event takes place. You're absolutely right. Wanted to get your thoughts on Dream in general. Do you believe that they will be? I mean, there's a lot of organizations now propping up out of the ashes of Pride, so to speak. Of course, there's World Victory Road, Sengoku, all that stuff. But do you believe that Dream, with the guys heading up, you know, behind the scenes, the former Pride staffers, do you think that they will be the one at the end of the day to sort of rise above the bunch and be the number one promotion over in Japan?
You know, I would have said definitely before they had problems with their TV deal in Japan. It's a different ballgame in Japan, the way MMA works there. You know, pay-per-view is not really a viable way to maintain an MMA organization there. You know, look what happened with Pride. That if you can't get a good, solid TV deal, that it kind of spells doom for you. So, you know, before that, I thought they looked really good. Now, I guess it's just a matter of if they can catch on enough and have enough events to where they can really build a following. And they're doing a great job so far. I mean, I don't know how many events they can reasonably schedule in such short time spans. But so far, it looks like they're doing an excellent job. If they can survive through the summer, then I would say it looks a lot better.
Yeah, they're lapping everyone else in terms of the number of events that they're pumping out. I just don't want to see them potentially get burnt out and lose, you know, the matchups in such a short amount of time. This is sort of the calm before the storm in the world of mixed martial arts over on our side of the globe. Obviously, on May 24th, there's UFC 84, Ill Will, and that is headlined by BJ Penn and Sean Sherk. And then on May 31st, it's the debut of Elite XC on CBS. I want to start by asking you quickly about UFC 84. I understand you recently spoke to Sean Sherk, and obviously there's a lot of talk and a lot of interest around his return to the octagon after getting stripped of the lightweight title for that positive test result after his title defense against Hermes Franca at UFC 77 last summer. What is Shirk's mindset right now? I mean, does he feel like the MMA world is on his shoulders? Are the eyes of the MMA world looking at him and hoping that he fails, particularly because he's kind of known now as public enemy number one for the way he handled the whole situation?
You know, in talking to him, he seemed to have a really good attitude about the whole thing, actually, because, you know, of course, I asked him about the steroid stuff, but, you know, are you absolutely just sick of talking about it? He said, you know, I expect that I have to talk about it now. And, you know, we kind of went over that, and it seems like, you know, he is professing his innocence, and I got to say, the more I hear from him, the more he's making a believer out of me. Just talking to him, he sounds like an innocent man. He's saying all the things that an innocent man would say.
What exactly is he saying, though? I mean, everyone's always going to...
He's saying... Right, well, he's saying, you know, I asked him, okay, well, tell me why you think that this test came up positive. And, you know, he had some points about the laboratory, the Quest laboratory, that somebody went in there and tested one of their machines, and there was carryover from previous tests in those machines. He also said he had his supplements tested. He was taking about 25 supplements, and he said that one of them, when he tested it, had small amounts of steroids in it, and that's apparently not all that unusual if you're reading about it. You know, you can go into a GNC and buy something that might be contaminated. So he cut his supplements in half. He said he's paying for his own pre-testing before each fight now, had himself tested twice just to make sure that there wasn't going to be a false positive. He took three polygraph tests, and he said, you know, people always say that the polygraph tests aren't 100%, but hey, I took three of them, and you'd think if I was lying, one of them would catch me. you know, that kind of stuff. And then, you know, when I kind of pressed him on it, he just said, look, people can make up their minds one way or another, and they're going to. I just wish people would kind of look at the facts before just assuming that I'm guilty. And if you look at the how little nandrolone was in his system when he was tested, it's kind of like, given I did some reading on nandrolone, and since it stays in your system for months and months, it's kind of uncommon for a guy to test just barely positive. And I've talked to a couple other pro fighters who said, yeah, you know, if he was positive, he would have tested way more positive than that. I don't know how they knew these things. I didn't ask them. But Sean Sherk's attitude about it seems to be, hey, you can believe me or you cannot believe me. I know what I did and what I didn't do. And he seems like he's not letting it get to him too much. He's just focused on the fight.
You know, the site that you write for, cagepotato.com, given all that, you guys put up a pretty interesting sort of photo display. You put two pictures of him back to back. One from last year, I think it was right before or during that Franca fight, and then one from him training now, and there is obviously a huge difference. I mean, right there, it seems as though the proof is in the pudding. Unless he's doing something different with his diet or whatnot, he looks like a smaller guy.
You know, Ben Goldstein, who also writes for Cage Potato and is editor of Cage Potato, he put up those photos, and then, you know, we discovered afterwards, some people pointed out, and I think the top photo there when he was looking a little bigger was before his fight with George St. Pierre when he was a welterweight. So I think that explains some of it.
Okay.
We also put up an article that I wrote a couple of days ago about, you know, kind of a case for cutting Sean's shirt a little bit of slack, and just kind of the reasonable doubt angle that, you know, and say he had tested positive even though he knew he didn't do anything, you know, what would you do if that was you in that situation? How could you clear your name? And the answer, I think, really is you can't. I mean, there's just too much skepticism about pro athletes and steroids that as soon as we hear guys tested positive, you know, it feels true. It feels like a fact because it fits with a narrative that we've already come to believe. And so, you know, I would say, hey, go take a polygraph test. Well, he did that. He took three of them. It still didn't work. You know, there's just nothing really you can do to clear your name. And we have to admit the fact that false positives happen. I mean, I don't want to, you know, defend Sean Sherk at all costs, but the more I look at it and the more I talk to him and do some reading on it, the more I tend to believe that was a false positive.
Well, one thing is for certain, though, everyone knows that he will be totally clean going into this bout with the random drug testing that the Nevada State Athletic Commission has administered, and they've tested both he and BJ Penn, as well as some of the other fighters on UFC 84. So we know that there won't be any sort of clouds of controversy around that fight. The other big event that is obviously on the horizon, May 31st, Elite XC's debut on CBS, and everyone's talking about Kimbo Slice, going to be sort of unleashed to the masses, so to speak. And ESPN just recently, they re-air, trying to sort of you know, ride the coattails of this Kimbo wave. They re-aired the segment that they produced on E60, their magazine show, in which it was a profile on Kimbo, and they updated it a little bit to talk about the whole CBS card. I understand as well, you've been very busy. You've talked to Bas Rutten, who is Kimbo's trainer, and apparently they weren't very happy with that portrayal on E60. Can you shed some light on that?
It wasn't the portrayal on E60 that they were unhappy with. It was an article by LZ Granderson, one of the ESPN.com columnists on ESPN.com's Page 2 section. And it was really a really negative, like kind of a character assassination of Kimbo Slice. And LZ Granderson is a black guy, and so the angle the whole time was he thinks Kimbo is portraying all these negative African-American stereotypes, and as a black man, it really makes him sad to see it. He compared him to a cross between Lil Wayne and Kunta Kinte, and the word coonish appeared several times throughout the article. I mean, really, really pretty incendiary stuff. And I talked to Bas Rutten about it. I have an article up on SI.com this week about Kimbo and about all the backlash and the hype. And I talked to Boss about it, and he said that they were really bothered by that article, and Kimbo read it and, you know, just was kind of stunned, saying, you know, what did I do? What am I doing wrong to get these people to say this stuff about it? You know, to Kimbo's perspective and to Boss's perspective, he's just trying to be a fighter, just like anyone else. They have a hard time seeing that, you know, his background, just his general demeanor freaks some people out, and they look at those those YouTube videos, and they can't separate that Kimbo Slice from the Kimbo Slice he's trying to be now, the real fighter. But they are generally bothered by that. They are, you know, kind of avoiding the media now after some of that stuff. And I think it's like a double-edged sword where this YouTube video fame got him to where he is. I mean, he wouldn't be making six figures with only three MMA fights if it wasn't for that. But at the same time, it has a lot of negative consequences that he has to deal with.
I'm actually sort of surprised that it took us this long to for someone to write something like that. It seemed as though it's almost like, okay, now he's on CBS and people are giving him, you know, the attention that I guess he deserves. But it took so long. If you just, you know, of the way the media would obviously sort of portray someone like him, and especially someone, you know, that once he gets involved with MMA and then, you know, all the negative stereotypes involved with that sport, I'm surprised that it took this long, but absolutely right. I encourage people to actually read the article from ESPN.com's page too, and then as well yours on SI.com. Let me ask you about Kimbo, though. The actual fight itself, James Thompson was a guy that a lot of people weren't really expecting him to be facing. I mean, this is a guy that's fought in Pride. He obviously is known for his quick knockouts that he's on the receiving end of. But do you believe that this could be a guy that actually could, you know, derail the Kimbo train? I mean, he's no Tank Abbott. And obviously, you know, the opponents that Kimbo faced on the street are, you know, questionable at best. Bo Cantrell, we all know how he performed in the cage. Does James Thompson actually have a chance to, you know, throw a wrench in all these plans?
I would say that he has the best chance of anyone Kimbo's fought so far, which isn't saying much. But, you know, I would be very surprised to see James Thompson come out there and beat him. I think it tells you something that for their first CBS show, you know, the make-or-break show for Elite XC, they put Kimbo up against James Thompson, and James Thompson coming off two straight first-round knockout losses. I think they looked at that and they thought, okay, well, here's a guy, a big, intimidating-looking guy who has, on paper, a pretty good record, has been around a little bit, fought some people, but at the same time, not a serious threat to Kimbo, and he can be knocked out, and he will stand and trade with him. I think that's what Elite XC is thinking, making this fight, because obviously there's no future for them in hyping James Thompson, but there's a big future in hyping Kimbo Slice. I mean, of course, anything can happen. James Thompson's big, strong, aggressive guy. So, you know, who knows? But I would be very surprised to see him beat Kimbo Slice.
For me, the most interesting part of following Kimbo's career is always thinking about who's he going to fight next and watching him rise up that ladder, sort of waiting to see someone give him a test. If you were, you know, Gary Shaw or whoever makes the real decisions over there at Elite XC, who would you like to see him fight after James Thompson? Thinking that, okay, he's going to get by Thompson, it won't be that tough of a battle. Do you think that they, you know, there was talk of Ken Shamrock, which I think is a stupid decision. There was talk of Sean Gannon,
yeah,
who was the one guy who defeated him in a street fight. Who would you like to see him up against next?
Yeah, I mean, Ken Shamrock and Sean Gannon, those would just be purely hype matches, not meaningful matches at all. I would say, you know, talking to Boss about it, and Boss is kind of defending him, saying, hey, people, you know, want to see him thrown up against somebody top 10. He's not ready for that yet. You don't expect another guy who's 3-0 to be thrown in against the top 10. Of course, the argument is that, like, you know, another guy who's 3-0, he fights other guys who are 3-0. He doesn't fight guys with losing records like Tank Abbott. I would like to see him, let's say he goes out there and knocks out James Thompson. In a perfect world, I would like to see him fight somebody on the outskirts of the heavyweight top 10. Maybe Alexander Emelianenko. I think that would be a great fight. Maybe somebody who's got a good ground game. I would say Jeff Monson or anybody like that who would absolutely destroy him on the mat. But then, you know, maybe somebody who, like somebody like Ben Rothwell. I mean, I think Ben Rothwell is a great fighter, got a lot of tools. Put him up against Ben Rothwell, who is solidly right around the 10 or 11 spot in most people's lists. And then I think you really find out what he's made of. You know, I don't know how long you can keep babying him and keep setting up hype matches for him. I think if you beat James Thompson, you got to do something like that. But then I don't know what Elite XC's roster is like, what their options are.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting to compare the way they're grooming him as opposed to the way the UFC is grooming a guy like Brock Lesnar. They're, you know, the UFC is throwing Brock Lesnar to the wolves. Granted, Mark Coleman is, you know, his better days are behind him, but they're putting him up against tough, proven competitors, while Elite XC is, you know, not giving him tomato cans, so to speak, but they're clearly hoping that he wins and gets by these guys. My final question on Kimbo, I'm always interested to hear what people who follow this sport and cover it for a living think about him. Do you think that Kimbo Slice is good for the sport of MMA?
You know, when he first started in MMA, I really didn't. I had a lot of resistance to it because it just seemed like, well, somebody's trying to cash in on a guy who's, you know, an internet celebrity. He seemed to me like when somebody gets famous like that, that kind of viral video fame that rests on capturing people's attention for a couple of minutes, it's like, all right, well, is this the MMA version of Tila Tequila? You know, who is this guy? But as I talk to people like Boss Rutten and Sean Tompkins, people who have trained them and been around them, and people whose opinions I trust and respect, and hear what they had to say about him, then I started to be won over. And you could see it even despite Tank, even though Tank didn't put up a very good fight, you could see how crisp he looked. He didn't look like that just head-hunting street fighter anymore. He looked like he's starting to become a real fighter. Of course, it's all going to depend on if he's picked up the ground game or not. People say he has, but we have yet to see it. I'm starting to be won over by Kimbo Slice, that he can be good for the sport. My only concern is the way Elite XC is using him right now, that they're trying to exploit his momentary fame and try and turn a quick buck off of it instead of trying to groom him as a real credible contender. That's my concern.
All right, well, we'll have to wait and see for May 31st when he does, in fact, face James Thompson and see if the Kimbo train will continue to roar forward and pick up steam, or if James Thompson, of all people, could derail it. Ben, awesome talking with you, man. Great meeting you. Again, cagepotato.com, one of the best MMA sites, one of my favorites. I'm not just saying that. Without a doubt, one of the best on the web, as well as you can read his work at si.com. He's got a great article up there right now about Kimbo Slice. Thanks for the time, and continue the great work.
Thank you. I look forward to talking to you again.